Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Is It a Real Classic, a podcast about movies and TV shows, where a bunch of well-versed folks come together and answer that age-old movie debate about what makes a classic, or what just is good, in general. I feel like that's another thing we could say. I am your host, Lit Nick, Dab in the studio. With me today is John with Jared. Say hello.
Hello.
That's right, it's really quicker than usual, because I'm in the studio. Once again, we have Cobra Kai KP.
Sweep the leg.
Oh, that was loud. I like that. I like it.
The strength.
The strength and poise that is required.
It's command.
Yes.
I need to actually watch that show now that it's here. And it's on Netflix now.
I need to watch the original movie still.
Okay. All right. Don't bookmark that for later. Then, of course, we have... I have there in my notes. Ray. There's of the Lost Ark. No.
No. Oh, man. I liked Ray Tatooine.
Listen. In our hearts, we will call him Ray Tatooine, but in our mouths, we will say Ray Durs of the Lost Ark. You may just say Ray.
You can just like my
Durs
name
of the Lost Ark
isn't even that.
We gotta have a pun
on every other place on the Go Home Heat production. I am just called Ray.
Not in this house.
But here you call me Ray Tatooine.
We call you Ray.
Durs of the Lost Ark.
Yeah, there you go.
All right, what movie did we watch?
I'm going to try my hardest to interrupt you before.
Okay, today was presented by our main man, Mr. KP, where we had the film Dead Presidents, where it is, for those of you who don't know, a movie about a Vietnam War vet who, after returning home from the war, finds he's not the same person he was before, and in order to support his daughter, plans a risky heist to provide. Now, We did just come off this, essentially.
I will say that's also the plot of the last, 30 minutes
yes.
of the movie. it's like, yes, technically that is what happens in the
most
movie.
Most of the movie is just about the main guy, Anthony Curtis, and just him just, slowly losing his soul over the course of just being a part of the war. Which I feel like is part of the point of the movie.
It was a trek to get there, but that's what it was supposed to be.
It was supposed to hurt. You were supposed to think this guy sucks by the
Dang,
end.
Dang, man, this guy really...
He started off as such an idealistic and a hopeful guy, is the thing. He started off as you were hoping for the best for him. And then you saw him in the war, and you're like, I hope he makes it out. And then just slowly but surely, he just... Because he gets tainted by just the military complex, one could argue, which I think is what the movie's arguing, just he becomes... the worst. But
this movie came out in
1995.
A good year.
I don't know why I remember that just on command.
A good year. I was -1.
My sister was born.
Yes.
But anyway, let's just turn to the person who suggested this movie, who's been notably silent. Mr. KP, how we doing?
I'm good. We have a pretty impressive cast here.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Lawrence Tate, Keith David, Chris Tucker, Joaquin Woodbine, Freddie Rodriguez, Rose Jackson. I could mess up her name.
Her last name is Wright. I know that.
Nabush. Right. Delilah. She plays Delilah. Okay.
Yeah.
Martin Sheen. Isaiah Washington is the brother.
Mm-hmm.
I found it interesting because you start and he's in a middle class neighborhood.
Yeah.
And yet he chooses to run numbers. He kind of goes out of his situation in order to kind of, I think, chase masculinity in a weird way.
Yeah, because the whole first scene is just basically him, Chris Tucker, and what's his name?
Rodriguez.
Yeah.
Jose
in the... Yeah, Kirby isn't there yet. They're just talking about stuff while they're delivering milk and stuff and going through all this hyper-masculine kind of talk about oh, who you doing today? Kind of thing.
As teenagers can do.
As teenagers tend
to
do.
Posturing.
Yeah, and so you can tell, he's they're trying to make up for some kind of... And the one time when you meet his brother in the movie, which is 5 seconds, he's a college-educated man, but he's notably, from the way he is, kind of nerdy in his own fashion and isn't the kind of ideal masculine figure that, they've been talking about wanting to be. Off the jump.
Well, and the dad, if you notice, the dad became a man, according to what he's telling his son was, I became a man in the Korean War.
Yes, he did.
And you have the different, and they do hit on that as how military people viewed the different wars differently.
Yeah.
At the end, you have Martin Sheen pointing out that my war was a real war.
Yeah, the World War II, as opposed to the Korean War, as opposed to the Vietnam War.
Mine were real wars.
Right? I want to talk about that last scene when we get there, though.
Yeah, we'll get there.
Yeah, because that scene really did bring the whole movie in perspective, I think, for my opinion.
And the Hughes brothers, the directors of this, they also do Menace to Society, I believe, and several other...
Some Korn stuff, if I remember correctly. The band. Not Children of the Korn, to be clear. They did. They did music videos for them.
I was about to say, both of those things are very confusing.
I know. It's very strange. But they also did one episode, I believe, at least, of Good Lord Bird.
Which I find fascinating to watch. But they try to tackle so much here. You have a coming-of-age movie that turns into a
war movie
that then evolves into a
drama.
How do you deal with coming home from the war?
And then it turns into a heist movie. It's like a movie that with like several different legs.
Correct. And if you see the commercial, you think it's a heist movie, right?
Oh, yeah.
And then that's literally the last 22, 23 minutes of the movie. The rest of it is completely different. The war movie. It's funny how nowadays we view things differently. I haven't seen this in so long, but when I watched it, I couldn't help but go, "Boy, a Netflix series would have been so much better."
It's a thing that a lot of people are having nowadays. I feel like
it's really hard to encapsulate things because now you get to really go into detail of each character, right?
Yeah, that's a whole thing one could argue about binge culture and as well as just like what Netflix has really changed, how it reshaped the way we view media nowadays. Because
I mean, I've espoused that opinion quite a bit, just in general of like, man, this would have been a nice miniseries. I mean, this was a 2-hour movie, but I actually do feel that it was appropriately lengthed this time.
In my opinion, I think it was appropriately lengthed. I feel like it hit every... It's one of the movies I like to call like a swinging for the fences movie, where like it will hit 50 different things at once, but somehow find a way to either A, at least make it to a base, to borrow a baseball term, or B, manage to get a home run by the end of it. It's really interesting in how it's
able to touch all that. Too.
He is in it. And I was wondering about... I was like saying, like, is that... And you can always tell because he says that same...
He's got a smooth
he's got
way
that,
of talking.
Man.
Yeah.
As he said it, I was laughing at myself and like, I can't...
Well, there's these scenes where, you know, Chris Tucker's character is... Skip is trying to... You know, tell him don't get in the military.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, he makes a joke about his friend getting drafted. So you have one of them who gets drafted, one of them that enters the military voluntarily, and the other one who never wanted to be in the military flunks out of school, winds up having to be in it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Three different routes to the same place.
Yeah, and they're all
They wind up in when they wind up in the military, they meet a son of a preacher man who goes Cleon. And you do see too. How each of them deal with war, right? Your main character, Lawrence Tate, Anthony Curtis, winds up, I deal with war, I wind up, my girlfriend got pregnant when I was home and before I went to war, and now I can't look at the pictures, I can't think about anything that's back home, because if I think about what's
going on back home,
I'll die here.
Mm-hmm.
Chris Tucker, on the other hand, turns to drugs.
Cleon turns to the Lord.
Cleon, he literally gets jealous over... He loses it. He cuts the head off of someone. And it's not... As awful as it sounds and looks and unbelievable, you do... Maybe not that story, but you hear stories similar to of taking ears off of people. And it just the horrible war stories we've all read and heard that existed. Mm-hmm. It's a lot. The war part of it is a lot to take in. What did y'all think about that?
The war scenes specifically were, they were very strong and powerful, I think. What stuck in my mind the most was, again, that head scene, and then eventually when the guy stepped on the landmine, just went everywhere.
Right.
And right in front of Chris Tucker's face, and then the face of horror as he just it's like laying there, traumatized, not able to move.
I will also say that practical effects are way more, like, visceral in terms of gore, you know what I mean? Like, it was way worse. Like, if I watched a movie today, it would look so fake because of the CG or whatever. Mm-hmm. But, like, this is awful.
Yeah. It's tough. Yeah. It's tougher. The whole movie, it's it's not a feel-good film, and it is loosely based on a true story. So then you have Haywood T. Kirkland goes to jail, and he meets some people, and then he gets with an author, Wallace Terry, and they the book Bloods, an Oral History of the Vietnam War by Black Veterans is written. Kirkland meets several people, some of which were in jail for a robbery and face paint. So he and then also they morph this into the...
What are they morphing into?
The Black Liberation Army, notably robbing a Brinks truck. So they kind of, they fuse several different things that actually happened into each other to come up with a different tale.
Yes.
And it's, like I said, it is a lot to take in. Because then once he gets back home, there's the scenes between the pimp who has been dating the mother of his child.
Yes.
That scene is so hollow. Mm-hmm. You know, and you remember what I'm talking about? When he pulls up in the car.
Oh, yeah.
And he,
with the lollipop in his mouth.
Right, and he kind of big times him by handing a significant amount of money.
$100, I think, in his hand or something.
Yes, absolutely. And then it gets worse from there, of course, as they encounter each other in the hallway. And that's one of the just horrible. You have a guy that's somewhat of a war hero, and he gets basically sucker punched, and the guy explains to him how...
Again, berating him on the terms of his manhood, going back to the masculinity thing.
Oh, dude, yeah. I taught, you know, all those tricks
Your old woman is...
Woman knows now. She learned from me. Mm-hmm. You know, almost, you owe me a debt of gratitude here. Mm-hmm. It's just horrible. Then you move into the... He's so frustrated now. He had a job with the butcher, and he gets fired off that job. Mm-hmm. He bounces around trying to find a good gig, winds up with a butcher, and then that job runs its course. The butcher has to shut down the shop. That is what leads us to the scene where he, in the same amount of time of losing your job, a pimp walking out of your apartment, having just given
your
wife, significant other, money, beats you up with puts a gun to your face, to the point where you tell him to go ahead and kill you, because that is nothing that scares you. Mm-hmm. What's going on in your life is worse than that.
Yeah.
Right? And so then you go up the stairs, you get into an argument, and it's a horrible argument. He does get physical with her. He storms out. He
reflects a lot of what has been inflicted onto him, because that's typically, I think, what the character kind of does himself. Like, from the beginning, like the only time, like, the very beginning, the two scenes I'm thinking of was when he was playing pool with our main man, Terrence Howard. Like, the first time Terrence Howard gets physical with him, and after he wins, and, like, it's the thing where he doesn't lay a punch on him. The second time, he says the same kind of comments, same kind of things. What does our guy do? After post-the-war, post-all this other stuff, he takes the stick and starts laying into him the entire time. Yes,
absolutely.
The language of this movie is violence.
Ooh.
Yes. Absolutely. Absolutely. And you wind up to where, you know, that's when he is so far down that he walks into the rally. How would you describe it?
The Black Liberation Army, I believe.
Right, correct. He walks into that rally, and he kind of sort of gets inspired by the younger sister of his girlfriend, who is a speaker there. They have a few drinks, and he explains to her that there is a plan in the works to rob a Brinks truck. She could use the money for what she's trying to do. He could use the money, and of course the small-time gangster that he befriended before and after the war can use the money. And then he brings his old crew in, including Chris Tucker, and eventually winding up going to get the son of the preacher, who will use the money, I guess, for the work of God.
Yeah.
And he bought himself a caddy, dude.
Yes, he was full of it.
Absolutely. That dude was 100% full of it.
Cleon is terrible, and I love how terrible he is.
And the attempted robbery, like, that's one way you can kind of know this is sort of based on a true story, because there was no brains involved in this attempted robbery.
Oh, no. It was all just action.
We're going to crawl up underneath the vehicle and jump out, and we're going to get the truck and drive off with it. Okay, that'll make sense, right?
Yeah, we got it. It's all right.
And then they, you know, the guy that they hire to blow up the truck uses too much stuff and blows the whole truck up. Yeah. That has to be true, right? You don't write that into a story.
Yeah, that is too stupid to not be true.
Right, okay. And then, so this turns into, the whole thing goes south when the preacher who was the leader of their battalion after...
He can't do it. He doesn't kill a cop or get a cop out of the way because...
He loses his team, right? That's not who he... He's not the guy he was during war either.
Yeah, things have changed since right. then.
But Chris Tucker, on the other hand, had no trouble pulling the trigger this time around. If you remember, in the war, he froze up during one of these scenes because mm-hmm. the war had overwhelmed him. Now, this time around, you're talking about a guy who can't get a job. He's a junkie. There's nothing good going on. Mm-hmm. He didn't have any issue taking life this time around.
Oh, absolutely.
So all these characters significantly changed throughout the story.
Due to as the life response of the war, due to the response of all this other stuff.
So. And you're talking about a rough
neighborhood kind of thing situation, yep, rough economic situation.
You're talking
as well.
About a rough young man where your formative years are spent in war.
Mm-hmm.
You come home to a low economic scenario. You can't find work. The only things you really know how to do are take life. You none of these guys can sleep. One of the guys has got Agent Orange.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing is going right for them anywhere they go. Mm-hmm. The only thing they have are alcohol, drugs, and they eventually turn to this. And it's really, everything just continually goes wrong for this group of people, which mm-hmm. is what fascinates me, I guess, is that there was never a...
Heroic moment.
Not that I ever felt bad for anybody, but it was just continually bad.
It's a tragedy scenario. In many ways, right. I feel like.
I think the dynamic I liked the most and the scene I liked the most was when they were in Vietnam. It was Skip and Anthony, and they were having beers, and they were talking about Anthony was saying that he did not want to think about anything back home, like mm-hmm. that did not exist to him. I just thought it was interesting how, and you kind of understood more of his anger when he comes home and things aren't the perfect way he would have imagined them being.
Time didn't stop like he wanted it to.
Yeah, he let himself feel about it after the war ended, and he wanted it at that point, even though through the whole war he just blanked it out.
Right.
Meanwhile, Skip ended up being... He couldn't do that. He couldn't just push the outside world out of his mind. He wanted to go home.
Mm-hmm.
And then he gets home and he has nothing.
Right.
He has... he's getting checks and stuff, but he's messed up. He's got, Agent Orange.
Right. Right. His blood cells are all jacked up. He can't do anything.
So much wrong. And it's just wild. That dynamic between those two characters and how they felt during the war and after it are great.
Shout out to Chris Tucker, by the way.
Chris Tucker.
He stole every scene he was in.
Every single one.
Mm-hmm. He's really good. Like we said during the movie, he doesn't work a lot, but when he does.
He plays Chris Tucker, and he plays Chris Tucker beautifully.
He's the best Chris Tucker there is.
That's right. Except no substitutes. we also, there's something I also wrote a note here, which is the music of the movies also.
Oh, yeah.
The sound, the score by Danny Elfman itself is really good, but the soundtrack that it had.
Dude.
We had, James Brown in there mixed along with a bunch of, there was so much in there. It's hard to really.
The soundtrack winds up being a number one, right?
Yeah, it's.
Well, listen to these songs. I Got the Feeling by James Brown. Keep On Pushing by The Impressions. Smiling Faces by The Undisputed Truth.
Mm-hmm.
Right On for The Darkness, Curtis Mayfield. Just My Imagination, Temptations. Stevie Wonder, I Was Made to Love Her. The Impressions, When Something Is Wrong with My Baby, Sam and Dave. Ain't That a Groove, Jim Brown. The Big Payback is in there.
Oh, that's what I was thinking of. Because that's what during the where he's beating him with the pool stick.
Barry White was in there?
He was. Well, not the guy, but.
The song, right?
Yeah.
Oh my! It was so, and the way they
everything incorporated
the placement of mm-hmm. the songs is fantastic.
Like when we're talking about when the movie was going on, but the scene where the pimp shows up and kind of gives our main character the Rocky moment of wait, what have you been doing while I was at the war? What song did you say it was playing?
The lyrics were smiling faces, sometimes they lie, and then the background singers go. They don't tell the truth. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And you can hear that funky bass line as he's pulling up, but it's a slow funk. It's not...
It's not happy. It's more like...
No. No, it's hollow. And the mm-hmm. whole song is hollow. And as he drives up, it's literally evil pulling up on... Up until that point, it's a... I've come home and she loves me and we're going to go mm-hmm. be a family, right?
Yeah.
And then from the moment he pulls up, nothing goes right.
And the second time you see the pimp, he's dressed up like the devil. I mean, he's got like the pinch
literally
and the red thing.
Dressed like the devil, which is, again, attention to detail, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you have like the Father James Mitchell facial hair.
Wrestling reference, absolutely. Well,
speaking of wrestling references, can we talk about how everyone was cosplaying as Sting during the robbery?
It's a fact.
It was. Also, though, their white faces made for great photos.
Their visuals were beautiful.
The lighting in those scenes was perfect with the face paint.
She is sitting in a dumpster looking to the light two guns in her hands, and nobody has ever looked better ever than she looks in that scene with her face it's
haunting and
perfect.
It's good.
Oh my god. And then as they're walking above him and he's holding the rifle underneath the walkway,
mm-hmm.
Dude, again, it's just really well done.
Absolutely.
Okay, so the robbery mm-hmm. goes wrong. They have to split it up. Some of them, the young lady has died.
Our bomber guy got ran over to his own
stupidity. What a scene that is.
Like, he's literally running down like a alley where there's no exit, and like he just shoots blindly at the cop behind him.
Hits the cop, kills the cop.
Who's driving, and then the car swerves, just slams against the wall.
Oh my
also,
God.
Also, again, we mentioned this earlier, the blood in this movie is strange. It goes full Tarantino only when someone punches you in the nose.
Yeah,
that's the one weird thing for me.
It happens twice in the movie where someone gets punched in the nose.
And just
at what point their like platoon leader headbutts someone and like just a fountain of blood just comes flying out
right.
of this dude's
face. It's
like
when you accidentally have a balloon and just suddenly just like everything's spurting out of like a hose. It's like full blast. It's weird because like you'll see people getting shot. It's like, okay, that's not a lot of blood. And like even when some guy's disemboweled in Vietnam, like there's gore, but it's not a lot of blood.
Right. And then, dude, the nose, that's where the blood is kept.
That's my blood sack right there.
And then you have, once they get back to the hideout or whatever you want to call it, and they're splitting up the money. They're arguing because Chris Tucker's like, you were a coward. And he's like, I didn't want you, this junkie with us in the first place, the preacher. Mm-hmm. Preacher claims he doesn't want the money until, of course, is that Keith David?
Yeah, Keith David's character is...
he's fantastic.
Kirby?
He's fantastic.
Kirby. Yes, you're right.
When the guy pulls his leg off... And
in the beginning of the movie.
I totally forgot about that.
Oh, that's the best scene for me.
So good. He drops down on the ground and sticks the gun on the dude's head. Starts like, yelling at him.
Don't you take my leg?
Oh my God.
Don't take a man's leg.
That scene was perfect.
I almost forgot
about it.
It was so good. Right. And so then, Keith David's like, hey, you know, you don't have to have the money. We'll split it four ways. And he's like, no, I'll take the money. And so then...
use it for to buy a Cadillac and the nicest.
Right. Anthony Curtis's character and...
and we also have...
Chris Tucker's character
Skip.
Skip. Skip pull in and they give some toys away that obviously probably can't be tracked. They're in a rough neighborhood. Nobody will notice. They get some toys away to kids for Christmas. The other dude's out there giving away $100 bills, telling people that God put it in his hands and buying a Cadillac and running a small church where they know he doesn't have that much money. When Anthony Curtis drives to go try to handle this and tell him to cool off, he has been...
dragged away by the police.
Yes. And so then Anthony Curtis didn't know they have to be on the run. The police break into Chris Tucker's apartment, and that is a hollow scene as well.
Like, ooh.
We have Soul Train on the television set. They're introducing Al Green.
But the green lighting, too, where everything just looks sick.
Al Green is on the TV singing, I'm so tired of being alone. And you have Chris, who has come back from the war, had nothing around him, and he has OD'd. And it is just...
that's powerful.
That scene is so... I literally have goosebumps up and down my arm talking about that scene.
Yeah.
And when his eyes are...
it's glazed over white.
Oh, my God. And so then they turn around and they go... they finally...
they go after our main two of Curtis, and we go after
David
Kirby.
Key's character and Kirby, yeah. And they go to run away, and Kirby even says when he sees him first, he's going to take the... he knows he can't escape because, of course, he can't run at all. Mm-hmm. And he's going to take him on, and then... of course, Anthony Curtis gets caught in another pretty good scene where you have like 90 cops in a hallway.
I remember screaming in the movie, I think you got him, because everyone's got like a gun pulled and pointed at him.
Right. And then you have the scene where Martin Sheen is your judge. He's being
the
tried in court.
Scene.
The final scene. Well, second to final scene.
Second, penultimate.
And they try to make excuses as the this guy was a war vet, you know, to go light on him for that. And Martin Sheen goes to the part where he says,
I served in World War II. I've been in a real war, son.
A real war, I might add. And you've...
There's this very... what's weird is, like, I was thinking about this... there's this... I don't remember who it was who did this. There is... And it, maybe the scene... The video I'm referencing is not like this at all. But there is a scene... this YouTube clip I've seen floating around all across YouTube, where it shows like two vets talking, one from World War II, one from Desert Storm, and then like it just has the two sitting across from each other, and as the quote in the middle, "You haven't really been through a lot, have you, son?" Which for me is like the biggest. What are you? What? And it's a whole thing when we're talking about like masculinity in terms of like what the war and patriotism and all this blah 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 really amounts to, which is nothing. Honestly, like we're saying all of this, like we're saying all of this rhetoric, we're saying like all this thing, like, you do this for your country with all the valor, and yet for some people you get like, in fact I would argue most, when you come back you don't get anything. It's one of the facts I feel like that we've seen and experienced through just how we've been able to enlighten ourselves with the facts of the how America reacts to war.
Well, for one thing too, you gotta the different aspects of these judgments, right? Mm-hmm. For one thing, we've been in some form of war, conflict, occupation forever. It feels like. And you have the World War, you know, the different ways, and I don't see that as much now as I did at one time, but the different ways, you know, the military people look at each other, like we've been through this, but, you know, I was in this, that was in that. The way, I feel like us as civilians. People, civilians, I look at them all like, oh my God, they've been through a war. And to me, that, you know, first of all, regardless of
what war it was, respect, obviously.
Yes, you went out there and you put your life on the line for the safety of others. You know what I mean? In theory, right? And that's what you're trying to do. And I don't ever get those judgments. It overwhelms me sometimes when I think of people.
Yeah, it's a strange thing that I guess I don't know if that's just a thing that like other vets have with each other, or if that's just a thing.
Well, I don't know that that's a predominant thing. Who knows if that's a thing?
Maybe it isn't. Jared, you had you were going to say something a little earlier, I noticed.
This movie is just like a lot about the hollowness of like macho posturing.
Absolutely.
Where it ends up being that, especially with the war, where it comes back, they went there to, quote, become men.
Yeah.
And what happened there crippled them.
Absolutely.
It did not do what they were told it would do, what society told them to do, what the recruiter told them it would do.
Right. So they tried to make up for it when they get back.
And they come back and they're expected to do this because that's how society wants them. That's how his wife was talking. Like, his wife just did not understand. Like, she was right in many, many points, but she did not seem to understand what was fundamentally different about him. The line she had where she talked about she loved the boy that
went to war.
Yeah, that like went to war, not whoever came back. I think that was a very telling line.
Dude, the worst line though from her was that there ain't no free meals here, like when you were in the Marines.
Ooh.
Dude. Oof. And like you said, she had points. You know what I mean? There is a bigger thing when you look at movies like this and you see, and this is the first one I remember, and I could be wrong, that tells this version of the American soldier coming home, the urban version. We've had the Rambos and all these other different ones like that, but one thing that they tend to all have in common is it's not easy for anybody to come back and align themselves back in society, and not providing avenues is horrible.
The one movie that I was thinking of, and it's been referenced like since it recently came out, was The Five Bloods by Spike Lee.
Correct.
Where it's as a very similar take on it, where you see these five black Vietnam vets coming back to Vietnam to pay respects to their fallen brother and blah blah blah, and it's very similar to that fact of like all of them felt like they went to fight a war when no one back home cared about them anyway, so why am I fighting the white man's war? Something that's said in both this movie and that movie.
Right.
As well as this thing of just feeling as though they did all of this and they got nothing out of it. Not like the country got nothing out of it. They didn't get anything out of it. What was the point of everything?
Right. Well, I do think too with that war in particular, you have so many different points of view of what was going on. Because you have like the one point of view, which is, you mm-hmm. know, you went over and you fought a war. Then you have that version that you made famous to some degree by Ali, mm-hmm. you know, when he chooses not to go. And then you have this odd version of the hippie movement hated the soldiers, whereas the hippie movement would tell the story if you watch the, what is it, Chicago 7?
Yeah, Chicago, okay. Trial of the Chicago 7 was right. recently came out.
You watch that and you start to realize that the hippie, the version they're telling in that story is they didn't hate the soldiers. I mean, the man literally stood up and read the names of the dead soldiers. Mm-hmm. When they said, you have anything else to say, right? So you have so much confusion in the judgment of the way people thought of the war back then, and that splinters over time, because if somebody's telling one story, it's hard. Mm-hmm. When you're trying to tell seven different versions of one thing, which is what society has tried to do now, it's really hard to get a grasp on it.
Yeah. Slightly, Right, and then apparently, and you know this fact, there's a very odd... There's someone in this movie that has a very fun fact reference to Guns N' Roses.
Yes, I stopped the movie while the butcher that hires Anthony Curtis is the person who named Slash. Mm-hmm. And the story goes that Slash grew up, his mom... was a costume designer, designed David Bowie outfits, things like that. Mm-hmm. The dad was a photographer for album covers, things like that. So they knew a lot of famous people in Hollywood. And they would go to Seymour Cassell's house and play. He had kids. And Slash wouldn't stand still. He would just run around the house doing stuff all the time. And so the dude was like, where's the other one? Where's the other one? You know, Which one? You know, Slash. Because... Yeah, he stand still, right? So that's how Slash actually got his nickname.
That's a fun...
Saul Hudson would be his actual name.
Oh, that's why it's... I see. I don't see. But I see.
Some of those letters...
Slash.
Similar.
The thing is, every time someone says Slash, I swear I think they say Sting. And the fact that also they look like it's Sting in like the robbery has made this even more complicated for me personally. Because like...
I did not see anybody that looked like Sting in that robbery.
Well, you know, the dude who had the bomb, he had like
they a had hoodie. Black and white face paint.
Yeah, look at a picture of Sting behind you. We have a picture of Sting behind us right now, looking on at us at all times. Hollow be his name. Now, if you take away the black lines right there, he looks like he's in Dead Presence.
But the black lines are still there, though.
Yeah, but you don't need them.
Lars Tate comes up to that dude's belly button.
Okay. Remember when this podcast was very somber? We were talking about like the deaths of Vietnam.
Yeah,
what has happened?
Off the rails, right?
Okay, we should probably come back on down. I believe we've hit all the points we want to hit, unless anyone has any thing they want to bring up right now.
We are also recording this on the same day. We're recording this on the same day. We have talked about a bunch of other much lighter things.
Right.
We have to bring. I'm here to bring down the mood. I'm here to ruin everyone's day.
Actually, I picked something to ruin all fun.
Yeah, pick something that was going to just ruin my day. Well, it's a great movie, though. I not to spoil my choice and my pick for how this is going to go, but like I really fell in love with the movie. But
what are the categories to put the movie in?
The categories before we have our final bit, there's the definitive classic, which we would have with Ghost Dog. The modern classic, which is like a more modern movie, so this movie would not exactly count in that. Underrated classic, which this movie I think would probably count in that. A cult classic, which is like, it's a classic in the way of the specific genre in which we're talking about, or just straight up not a classic that we just found interesting to talk about. Which one we believe it falls into, I will leave up to us as Kevin leads us in our final, if he wants to step up on the little old soapbox.
Well, I don't think it could be a cult classic because it's like four different movies.
Yeah, it's like
so I don't know what genre I was
Is it a war movie? Is it a heist movie? Is it a coming-of-age movie?
I don't know. But I do think it is an underrated classic. I think that...
It's something that I haven't heard about before. Like, I've seen it, and I've references to it, but...
Is that I think I read it had like a 40-something percent on Rotten Tomatoes.
Who cares what Rotten Tomatoes
says? But that's odd to me that people would watch that and come away with... I do get that he... You could say, well, hey, this is too many movies in one.
Yeah.
And I totally get that. You know what I mean? Because it was hard to... But by the same token, I feel like you said, the attack on masculinity, you wind up getting to assess as you watch it. Or false masculinity, the things that we think masculinity should be, which really aren't, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think that is very interesting in how we how people are, the interactions between these people as they grow and they change due to just the tough circumstances they've been thrown at them. I find it fascinating. So anyway, and of course the soundtrack is.
Oh yeah, it's a movie that has found recent, like people started talking about it recently because of movies like The Five Bloods. I've seen people, and I did kind of mention this, like people were talking about like after they saw The Five Bloods, we want to see something interesting. You want to do, like Dead Presidents after that, get a mean double feature in there.
Yeah, right.
And
right.
Believe you me, it would be a mean double feature.
Right, right. I love
Necessary. Five
Bloods. I think it's four. Oh, it's, I think it's great. It's
beautiful.
Okay, so who's next?
I'm going to throw my hand in the ring for Underrated as well. I feel like that's the perfect kind of thing for it because I wouldn't say it's definitive because I need to see it a couple more times to know for sure, but I do think that it's something that should be talked about more often because, again, the fact that I've rarely heard of it until now, it should get that cultural reappropriation, that reviewing nowadays now that we have time to kind of mill on it after and retrospect being what it is. Jared, throw it over to you.
I still think it's too early for me to say anything definitively,
because
mm-hmm. We did watch it like 30 minutes ago. I think there's a lot of meaning to be gleaned from this movie, especially on repeated watches. And I really liked it, don't get me wrong. I actually think that the length and the different genres and tones that it goes through actually are to its favor. Mm-hmm. It's weird as a movie structurally. But, like, the way it takes you through the different phases of this person's life and the different ways people view him, how he views people, are really interesting. And, again, you can glean lots of meaning from that. And I know it's a cop-out answer, but, again, I, like, just watched the movie. I don't think I can say anything definitively, but I liked it quite a bit.
I do think it's in the movie's favor, too, that they don't present Tate as a wonderful guy.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Like, Tate starts off arguably as a wonderful guy, but then, like, the things just... Well, even then, he's still, like, doing... Like, being the wheel man for...
Trying to be cool.
Trying to be cool. Trying to right. fit in.
Right.
Ray, I know you've been a chatterbox this entire time.
It's tough, because... I guess I'll put an underrated classic. Mostly because I do think this movie... had flaws, but I don't think it had enough flaws to where I'd say it was not a classic.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this sparks genuinely good conversation. So yeah, that's my consensus.
Oh. Wonderful. Thank you, Ray. Heroes of the Lost Ark. Hey!
You waited so long.
It's about the pregnant pause, my guy. Anyway, speaking of you... thank you, first of all, that would be kind of, I guess, the consensus being kind of, we're leaning more towards Underrated Classic, but if you don't believe it, check it out, it's on Amazon Prime, watch it, hate it if you want to hate it, you know.
Overanalyze it, that's what you're supposed to do.
That's what we do, that's what I do all the time, and let me tell you, it's tiring, but it's fun, but it's still very tiring. But next time is going to be a presentation by once again KP, but also our senior friend over here, Ray.
Yeah, it's something,
There's of the Lost Ark, okay, cool.
Something me and Dad talked about when we were talking about a movie to kind of pick apart, and it is a superhero movie, but it's a superhero movie I do feel like not a lot of people talk about, at least as much as they should have, especially when they compare them to this specific superhero's other movies.
All right, the I'm expecting a deep pull. I'm expecting Steel. All right, hit me with it.
The superhero I am talking about is, of course, Batman.
I've never heard of him. Never heard of him. I'm excited.
Deep cut.
Deep cut from DC.
Which Batman?
1989.
That's the Tim Burton with Jack Nicholson.
Soundtrack by Prince.
The first one.
Also Danny the Joker, I believe.
At least the first one within the series.
Well, okay, but I mean, if we're going to go like all the way back. Well,
where does he get these magnificent toys?
Within this.
Wonderful. How dare you? Is it wonderful or... Well, we're going to find out, and that's going to be the first thing. Someone better bring that up about who was right. Was it me or KP or neither of us?
Where does he get the wonderful toys? Yeah, magnificent. I might have gone over.
It's all right.
Overboard on it.
Yeah, that's some money in the swear jar right there.
Right.
All
right.
So once again, from our team here at Is It a Real Classic, we have myself, Litnick, John Wick, Jared, our friend Cobra Kai, Sweep the Leg KP.
Strike first.
All right. See, if what you got to do is you got to say it before I say it, so that way.
Strike
it,
first.
We have Ray. This has been a Go Home Eat. Oh, yeah, really. You made me do it. This has been a Go Home Heat production 2020. Once again, telling you to go out there, find some good content, brother. You never know if you'll find, like, the next classic. And that would be a cut.